Welcome to the Drive Phase Podcast, the best podcast for information on issues surrounding sports business in the Caribbean. On the Drive Phase, we have discussions with sports administrators, coaches, athletes, and various stakeholders in the sporting industry and examine their contribution to sports and entrepreneurship. Here's your host, Dalton Myers.
Thanks as always, Colleen. He has chronicled much of Jamaica's golden era in track and field, well, certainly in sports, through photography for more than a decade, well, several decades. This episode, we have the award-winning photographer, Ricardo Makin, for the first of our series to mark what would have been Tokyo 2020. As you know, the Olympic Games, Tokyo 2020, has been postponed to 2021. Ricardo is a chief photo editor at the Gleaner, where he has been a part of a photography team for nearly two decades, along with 10 Press Association of Jamaica Awards for photography. He has also been the joint winner of the Inter-American Press Association Award in 2007 for news coverage. Ricardo, welcome, sir.
Hi, thanks for having me.
By any chance, are you a Liverpool fan?
No.
Yeah, well, that's a first.
I'm the guy who's down the river, you know? but congratulations on winning a title. It was well-deserved. You guys have worked hard.
Listen, after 30 years, it most well-deserved.
Yes.
I was saying to a colleague that I know that we won it 30 years ago. I just can't remember what that looked like with the trophy. I don't know what that celebration was because I was pretty young.
Well, the thing is that you're the most recent winners. So. Yeah, I don't know.
Listen, so you left Spanish Town High.
Yes.
And you went right into photography. And let me put this in context. Photography now isn't what it used to be. There are so many people who are now getting involved with photography. Back then, this wasn't the case. Why did you decide to go into it?
It's all by accident, actually. Photography is much easier to get into photography now than it was back then.
Yeah.
When we still shot film. So the story is, after graduating high school in 1996, I actually wanted to do electrical installation at the time. Because I had two uncles that I lived with, and both of them were electricians. So, you know, naturally, as a young man coming up, you're going to follow in, you know, the family members' footsteps. But I remember that summer, I got a job, basically, to work in a photo studio, just as a desker. It was called Photo City. It was owned by a gentleman called Kwak K. Kong. He's from Hong Kong. And I remember the year, you know, I used to, you know, after doing clean up the shelves and so on, and there are no customers in, I used to just basically go and peek into the studio and watch him, you know, setting up the camera equipment and so on. So I guess after a while, he kind of got annoyed. This young man every day come and just, you know, I'm pushing my head inside, you know. So he just asked me, say, you like this? I said, yeah. Before this, and I've never used a camera before that. I've never used a 110 camera, no kind of camera whatsoever. So it basically started there. I remember, like, on the weekends, he used to be in race car driving. So on the weekends, he would go, you know, drive with his friends, and then he'd say, well, you want to come? He'd carry me with him. And he would give me, I never owned a camera at the time. So he gave me one of his cameras. And from then, I started shooting without any kind of experience and so on. And he was very impressed with what I produced, you know, in terms of, you know, kind of thinking out of the box, the different kind of angles and so on. So he decided to take me under his wings and say, you know what, he's going to teach me a bit of photography and so on. And I got more and more interested. At the time, there's this place in New York called the New York Institute of Photography that did, it was mailing courses, not online courses like now. You know, you'd get the package, you'd go to the post office and pick up the package, and then you'd have to basically do all of the work in terms of the shooting the film and so on and process and everything. And you have to actually, you know, computer anything or type. You have to literally write everything on a piece of paper and send, mail it back for them to mark it and so on. So, yes, that's how I started in photography.
Interesting. You went to the Sunday Herald.
Yes, I went to the Sunday Herald.
And you stayed there for about 5 years. What was that experience like? And what some of the lessons you kind of, you know, got from there?
The Sunday Herald. To be honest, I'm happy that I started at the Sunday Herald because it's a much smaller media house and you had to put in a lot more work. The kind of the invaluable experience that I got there, I don't think I would have gotten it anywhere else in terms of, you know, a lot of thinking outside of the box.
Yeah.
You're competing with the dailies. Remember, this is a weekly publication. So when you come out on a Sunday, you have to come out with something much different. So you kind of look at news and sporting events in a much different manner. You know, it's more a lot of storytelling, a lot of more reportage type of shooting. Not the normal, just go and capture an event for next day's publication.
And then from the Herald, I'm assuming you then moved to the Gleaner.
Yeah,
and this was in 2000.
2003. Yes.
What are some of the experiences there? You have been there now for 17 years.
17 years.
How has that been going for you?
It has been great thus far as a photographer. It has given me a lot of opportunities, opened a lot of doors for me. You know, in terms, as you know, I've traveled extensively. Across the region and across the world, covering multiple events, not only sporting events, but also news events. But I guess most people would know me for the sporting events because those are the more flashy things. But I actually do other stuff apart from sports photography. So it has been really, the photography and photojournalism has been really good to me as a young man, coming from the background I'm coming from to where I am now.
Yeah. You have covered some Olympic games. I want to touch those. You have done the 2012 London Games and you have done 2016.
Yes.
Rio. What were those experiences like? Talk to us about that, you know, when it just started in terms of the Olympic Games and what were some of the experiences?
All right. Going back to 2012, my first Olympics, I remember in London, you know, it was just this. When you got there, I don't think anything can prepare you. What you see on television, you know, when you actually at the event, it's something totally different. I mean, that's the most people I've ever seen in one place. I mean, you see these massive stadiums that all, I think the stadium at the time was about close to 70,000 people.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact capacity.
Yeah, it was huge. And, you know, it's just like out-of-body experience at times, to tell the truth. Being there, seeing all of these great athletes competing against each other. And more importantly for me, seeing all these other photographers and basically, you know, the kind of friendships and relationships I've built over the years, you know, and the kind of guidance I've gotten from a lot of them, the more experienced photographers, who they have guided me as a young man.
Yeah, I was going to ask you though, so when you get there, and I mean, I know you have a lot of equipment, I've seen you with your several gadgets all over the place,
but
some of the persons in the, you know, developed space, or the mega companies that they work with have, you know, all the equipment. How do you then prepare yourself to get those shots that are just going to be different from everybody else?
Well, first and foremost, well, a lesson that I learned, not from the Olympics, but from the World Championships the year before, is that you must ensure that you make sure that you always have a camera bag with you. I had an experience when we went to South Korea that they lost our bags for like 2 days. So I made sure, listen, I can lose the clothes, do not lose my camera equipment. Do not lose my laptop, do not lose myself. Make sure that is always on me. Firstly, when you get to the Olympics, one of the first things you make sure you do is go and sort out your accreditation. Also, make sure that you find out where the photographer's briefing is going to be. There's usually two photographers briefing at the Olympic Games. This is vitally important. That's where you get your vest. The vest, without the vest, you cannot, even if you have the accreditation, you cannot enter any of the stadiums. So you make sure that you turn up. They give you a briefing. It's usually a one-on-one briefing that they explain to you where you can shoot from, what you're supposed to wear. You understand? In terms of even with medal presentations, they tell you how long you go out there, or long before the presentations you're supposed to turn up, or long before the event you're supposed to turn up, in terms of if they have limited positions and so on. And one advantage that Jamaican photographers had, especially during that period, because how they allot spaces is depending on how many countries you have in the events. You know how we dominated the sprints. So you know that you know, that there are other photographers from other much bigger countries that were very envious because Jamaicans are always guaranteed a spot.
One of the other things I wanted to find out from you at these games, I was talking to Lance Whitaker and a few of the other guys who have gone to some of these events about the amount of time and effort that you have to put into this. It's not just about turning up, is it?
Basically, when you're covering the games, you usually get anywhere between, say, a maximum of 4 hours if it's a good day. It's usually like 1 hour sleep, and you get like a 15 minute on a chair. You know, I get a half an hour there before an event, 10 minutes there. So you're basically always tired.
Yeah.
You're always, it's like you're running on fumes. But the thing is that the adrenaline rush, you know, you want to get the job done. Because I'm a workaholic and I'm a perfectionist. So I always want to get the job done. So, you know, you always crunch for time because these events, they happen so quickly. And a lot of it, depending on what the stadium is, people don't understand. What you see on television, you know, that's when you're inside the stadium, it's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
People realize, you know, how much running up and down you're doing, you know, trying your best to, as soon as you shoot an event, you have to go and download the images to send off. And you have another event coming in the next 10, 15 minutes. So you're always up because you have to do everything in real time. So it's always at breakneck speed. And then basically you do that for like a 2 to 3 week period.
And part of the challenge, but probably the excitement for photojournalists is that you don't want to miss any moment because somebody else could capture it. And so you're trying to get every moment, the best moments, and miss no important moment without knowing what is going to come next.
Exactly. And a lot of the times what happens is that there's a lot of jostling for positions. So for example, the marquee event, the 100 meters, all right? That event, usually, wherever the local time is, like usually between, like at about 9, 10 o'clock in the night, mm-hmm. normally where whichever country it's been held in. You'd see photographers from 5 p.m. come and line up, finish line, and they'll sit there for hours. Just the photographers alone, there's nobody else in the stadium. Because guess what? By the time that race is about to run, it will move from 10, 20 photographers to over 100 photographers at the finish line. And in terms of encompassing the entire stadium, you're talking sometimes anywhere between 300 to 500 photographers all over. And it's more competitive with photography because unlike broadcasting, which there's usually one company that's in charge of all of the broadcasts, and then the interviews are done by the individual companies. The photographers have to come individually for their different companies or agencies.
All right. And then part of the challenge is certainly for your experience, sometimes you have many different activities, competing activities, meaning that you have to be moving, well, I'm assuming, because we have track and field athletes.
Exactly. Let me give you a scenario. In Rio, in 2016, remember that Yonanite Wisdom, which that was his start.
Right.
Yonanite Wisdom was performing, was diving at the same time that there was a track event going on. We had to make a decision. Fortunately, because we cover so much track and field, we could easily use an image for a file image or so on. It wasn't the final.
Right.
It was a preliminary round. So we could easily, but normally we don't want to miss anything. Mm-hmm. And that's a drawback with just one photographer covering an event. But you know, it's very expensive to send multiple photographers to cover these events.
And also sometimes accreditation and trying to get all the accreditation for the relevant media houses, yes, and the restrictions there from the IOC.
Exactly. And as you would know, because people don't understand that, a lot of the time, this is a one-year process. You start doing everything 1 year before the Olympics.
Yeah.
The whole accreditation process, it's a 1 year process, it takes so long. And there are so many things that you have to do.
Yeah, that's true. From experience, I know it is a lot sometimes. But let me just drop your memory now to comparing your experiences at both Olympics, what you thought were some of the high points for you, certainly for London versus Rio, and some of the low points.
All right. Rio, I think the low point for me, and this is personal, is when I saw, you know, what the 100 meter, when I saw Safa on the track after the race, you know. As a Jamaican, I kind of felt, because, you know, Asafa was the man who basically started this level of dominance where sprinting is concerned. And it was kind of sad for me seeing him on the track at the time. Matter of fact, normally I don't usually lose focus, but I lost focus for like about 5 seconds there. You know, after the race was done, just seeing Asafa there, you know. I remember one hand on his knees looking up, you know, with that bleached beard that he had. Mm-hmm. That was probably the biggest low point for me in that Olympics. When I saw that the male 1, 2, 3, and this was probably more for Warren Weir, I was so happy for him. You know, such a humble young man, you know, trying young man, worked very hard. That was probably the high point at that game. So because everybody expected, you know, Bolt mm-hmm. and Johan were at this level, you know. And, you know, Warren just kind of surprised everybody when he came through for that bronze medal.
And remember, too, going into that Olympics at the national trials here in Jamaica, a lot of persons expected Nikhil Ashmead to get that third spot. Yeah, you had also Jason Young, who was right up there trying to get exactly. that third spot. So a lot of persons didn't expect Warren Weir to get it, much less then to go on to the Olympics
exactly.
to get a bronze medal.
Yes, that was a huge surprise.
Yeah, and from any of the other games, you know, what were some of the high moments for you?
2016, my favorite moment of all was Ilian Thompson. That 200 win, you know, that people don't understand the kind of pressure she was on a bit from Daphne, which was like a machine. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody was expecting Daphne, and you know, Ilian just really, really put out that wonderful performance, you know. The disappointment for me in Rio, to some extent, I guess it's kind of mixed. You know, I wanted to see Shelly do it, but Shelly had the issue with her toe at the time. So, but it was really great of her to come and even put on that level of performance, you know.
Yeah. So you have watched Usain Bolt dominate, certainly. Take you back to the 2012 London Games. What was that feeling like, knowing that he's from the country that you're from and that you're actually capturing images of him and others back to the Jamaican population and to the world in any case?
The first Olympics, 2012, when I covered Usain, seeing him come across that finish line made me then understand that this guy is not a normal human being. Mm-hmm. And he has this huge aura and presence in the stadium in which sometimes I don't know how to fully explain in all the time, but when Usain wins, you know, it's like it makes everybody happy. Everybody, don't matter which country they're cheering for, everybody just seems to cheer for this. He just... He exudes this level of confidence,
yeah.
And he brings people together.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think even if you don't know Usain Bolt and you go anywhere in the world, once you're a Jamaican, people assume that you must know him, because they identify you with
exactly.
him.
Exactly, I get that all the time.
But a question I asked Lance and several of the other guys who have gone to, you know, more games than I have gone. You know, how does it feel being at these games, knowing that people see you as a representation of these athletes, and sometimes you're as famous as some of the athletes amongst your peers?
Well, so at times it feels like a huge burden, to be honest. I know that, for example, I remember back in London, this would have been the first Olympics, but my second international games, because I would have covered the World Championships the year before. Mm-hmm. So I would have known most of the media people and most of the... And you find that everybody... Because a lot of the times, we'd be wearing the Jamaican colors.
Right.
So you find a lot of times... I've been offered... I have friends who come out and offer me, hey, I'll give you £500 for that shirt. I'll give you this. I'll give you that. It's just like... it's, all of a sudden, you get this huge attention. But it's even more when you're out there, because for example, one thing you know I love about Jamaican athletes, you know, when they hear a Jamaican saying, "Hey Shelly, hey Bolt, hey Warren," they normally just turn and come towards us. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. what you find happening, you know, a lot of the times, you know, what the photographers do, you know, They try to find you as the Jamaican, and they stay close by. That is more than likely they're going to come across. It happens all the time. Trust me, it happens all the game all the time.
Because they know that the athlete is going to come across to you.
Hey, they know the athletes are going to come out of their direction.
That one is very interesting. I know that the next Olympics is coming up. What are some of the advice you'd give to young photojournalists who are going to these games? What should they look out for? I know you have some young guns in the Gleaner group there that you're training, but you know, what are some of the advice that you'd be passing on to them?
To go and shoot boys and girls championships.
It's to start there.
Yes. And the reason why I say that, you might not believe what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. That boys and girls champs is the hardest sporting event to shoot, to cover in the world.
Explain a bit more for the listeners.
All right. Because of how big boys and girls champs is, you have that level of pressure also in the stadium. And the thing is that our stadium is a little bit old.
It's very old, Ricardo. Very old. Not a little bit old. It's very old, and we need a new one in Jamaica.
I'm trying to be bothered. But it's not necessarily the most suitable thing for a photographer to express themselves in terms of you won't have the kind of move, like for example the head-on positions and so on. You don't have that at the stadium, so you tend to have to be more creative, and that has helped me personally as a photographer. Because it has, when I go to these big events now and I see that this big facility and everything is put up here for me, you know, basically it's like, you know, that's easy in comparison to shooting boys and girls championship. Boys and girls championship also teaches you to be disciplined as a photographer. Mm. Because the fact is that it's not like when you go, you're going to have everything up instantly electronically where you get all this information. So it teaches you that you need to get your name, you need to get your captions. You need to go over, you understand? Ensure that you're coordinating well with your reporter and so on. So teach you these little things that strengthen you when you go to an international event.
Yeah, and for the viewers and listeners, Boys and Girls Championship is our top high school championship in Jamaica. Well, it's probably one of the best high school championship in the entire world. An event we always encourage people, wherever you are, to try and get a piece of it. Ricardo, let me ask you about, there's a keepsake that we had in 2017, a book was done by the Gleaner, to kind of chronicle Usain Bolt's historic journey in sprinting, and a lot of the work is your work. How does that make you feel, just looking at your work and admiring the great job that you have been doing over the decades?
I think that's one of my proudest moments in my career, you know, being a part of Usain Bolt legend, the book that Gleaner put out that year. It's also basically every single Gleaner photographer has a hand in that book, even though I would have shot most of the images, you know. So it was, and I think that it's something that was needed. You know, one thing in this country, we're not very good at telling our own stories. Foreigners always come down and tell our stories. I think we need to tell more of our own stories. So I think it came at the perfect time.
Let me ask you something else. As you talk about other photojournalists who would have contributed to it, and I just want to expand it a little bit more, what the relationship has been, you know, amongst yourselves in terms of Jamaican and Caribbean photojournalists, especially because most of the top persons we have in Jamaica are more mature. We're not having a lot of the youngsters making that transition as we probably should. But what has been, you know, that relationship between each of you?
Well, the relationship has been good. And just to segue a bit, you do have a few young photojournalists coming through. Right here you have Gladstone Taylor, who's basically the multimedia photo editor, who he'll be at the next Olympics. He was at the World Championships last year. And he has basically gotten an eye for track and field, which basically lessens the pressure on myself. You know, I can focus more on my family and my children and spend a bit more time with them. And I've seen right across the board, I see a lot more youngsters coming out to the sporting events, to the track and field events at the stadium, which is a good thing. I always love to encourage youngsters to, you know, focus on especially improving the quality of their work.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you. And I'm not even suggesting that we don't have, and I know Gladstone very well, cool dude and really, really hardworking, and somebody who I enjoy working with. And a lot of the photojournalists who I have gone to major games with, you know, we always have a very good working relationship. And I think there are some really good guys coming out of Jamaica, you know. I just hope that more of the youngsters can get involved.
And across the region also, we tend to, when we go to the games, we're very tight. You know, everybody, we basically stick together. You know, usually find us sitting at the same places when you go to the games. We usually try to book the same hotel so that we all can stay close to each other. So that's always a good thing. We always have to look out for each other, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I've said to persons, and I haven't been to so many Olympics as you have, or major games, but it's always great as Caribbean people to kind of link up, as we call it, because, you know, we have shared experiences and we understand our background and know that we always need assistance, you know, right through. So it's always a great experience there.
Yes, most definitely.
I must ask your advice on this. You have been covering sports for a while, and persons are concerned, some persons, about male sprinting in Jamaica. We're going to track and field now. I know she can never ask you this one, but what do you think our future holds? Do you think there's a concern, and should we really be, well, using concern twice about our sprinting?
I think everything goes in cycles, Dalton. We had a great decade that we dominated for. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have a few youngsters coming up. Let's see what happens in the next 3 to 4 years. You know, although the other argument would be that the women just keep on performing, which is true.
Yeah.
This is true.
The women are always performing.
Always find a woman, you know, popping up. So,
or two or three.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that hopefully the next 5 years we'll maybe not get back to that apex that we were at 2008, 2012, 2016. But maybe we'll see. We'll have another male sprinter on the podium, whether silver or bronze or maybe gold. Mm. But I have faith that, you know, soon and very soon we'll be back there.
Which other event outside of track and field you have covered that you know you enjoyed watching, maybe even for the first time, but you're really appreciative going to watch that, whether Olympics or other major games?
Funny enough, at the Commonwealth Games, I actually enjoyed watching, but covering the Sunshine Girls, you know, in terms of netball.
Which one of the Commonwealth Games was this?
That was 2014.
Okay. I think that's Delhi.
No, man, that was in Scotland.
Glasgow.
Yeah, Glasgow.
Right, Scotland. Glasgow.
Mm. I really enjoyed covering. You know, there's something about the Sunshine Girls, which in terms of team sports,
yeah,
they're just all for, when you talk about a family, I see some things. So these girls just the coalesce, they just support each other. Especially when they're at the games, you know, when they beat England at the time for the third place medal at that event. And trust me, the kind of celebrations I saw at that place, it was crazy, you know. And it was at a high point for me while covering international games.
Give me your top three favorite Jamaican sports persons you've covered.
Oh, well. Oh God! You put me in a position, your man. I don't want anybody to see me as a boy, but Ricardo. Sharon Simpson.
Okay.
Genuine person. Mm-hmm. There are a lot. Kimberly Williams.
Triple jumper.
And I'm this is just personal relationships. Mm-hmm. Usain Bolt. And it's not because Usain Bolt is the big superstar.
Yeah.
it's a Usain Bolt that many people don't see. The Usain Bolt, when both of us are sitting down in a hotel lobby or in a hotel, in his living room where he's staying at, and you know, just talking, having a conversation. But we're both United fans also. But that's true. That's it.
Which is sad, but I'll forgive you for now.
But I think you want genuine people. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen, Makin, you have said that you're semi-retired. I don't even know what that means, but for the purposes of my viewers and listeners, I mean, you have captured a lot of images and has done a fantastic job, certainly for Jamaica and the Caribbean. And I said that as somebody who has worked with you over the years on different projects, you know, in and outside of track and field, somebody that I always admire. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you, probably don't have a lot of time for it, but where do you see photojournalism going, certainly in Jamaica? Let's stick with sports now. Do you think it is something that is genuinely going to pick up in terms of a craft within the space?
Most definitely, I think that it's the sky's the limit. And I really mean that when I say that, because I would have seen how sports photojournalism has evolved in my time, in my two decades, basically being around the profession.
Right.
And I see a lot of the younger guys, you know, they're becoming way more technical in terms of their craft and so on, and they're paying a lot more attention. So I really see this guy, these guys can go basically anywhere, any place. They can be amongst the best of the best in the world.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Ricardo, again, thanks very much for joining us. And I appreciate people who understand that you're a national treasure, my brother. You're a national treasure, whether you believe it or not.
Well, thank you very much, Dalton. You know, it was my pleasure to be here on your podcast.
Appreciate it, man. Guys, you can follow Ricardo. He's on Twitter at rmakin and also on Instagram and Facebook. So on behalf of producer Rashika Grant, Marsha Boyce, Heather Bernard, and the entire production team, thanks for joining us on this episode of The Drive Phase. Remember, guys, to check out our website. It's at thedrivephase.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or whichever directory that you use for all your podcasts. And we're going to be on YouTube also. We put those in the show notes. So you can go and tell a friend about the show, so they too can spread the word. We appreciate ratings on any one of the podcast directories that you use. And you can send us feedback at thedrivephase@gmail.com. That's our email address. So until next time, see you then.